there's a lot of new people who's still new, doesn't know how to survive during winter.
Finding solutions to keep Anchorage's homeless population safe. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Friday, October 18th. Good evening, I'm Lori Townsend. Also tonight, Alaskans' only opportunity to spear fish.
If you try to catch a whitefish on hook and line, it's difficult. So doing a spear fishery is about the only way to get them if you want to harvest whitefish to eat.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Today's broadcast of Alaska News Nightly is presented by Wells Fargo, extending its support of Alaska residents beyond banking by supporting the programming of public radio throughout Alaska, giving back to the community. Wells Fargo, together we'll go far. And by Crowley, celebrating 60 years in Alaska, Crowley knows Alaska and uses that experience to deliver project solutions from concept to completion. More at CrowleyAlaska.com.
A small plane crashed last night at Fairbanks International Airport, killing one and injuring two others. Airport Police and Fire Department Deputy Chief Dan Grimes says the Cessna 150 went down on takeoff around 5:30 p.m.
Our units responded to the scene, located the aircraft, and with the assistance of University Fire Department and City of Fairbanks Fire Department, were able to remove three persons from the aircraft and transported all three to Fairbanks Memorial Hospital.
Grimes says one of the three was declared dead at the hospital. The deceased is John Tanner. He was 51 years old and from Fairbanks. Injured was Bruce Nahorny, 62 years old, and a juvenile male whose name is not being released. Grimes says there were no obvious weather factors that could have caused the accident, and the crash scene is being investigated in cooperation with the National Transportation Safety Board. The 78-foot fishing vessel Lone Star, which had been operating as a salmon tender in the Aygushik River before it sank on June 30th, is finally on its way out of Bristol Bay. It's been under tow since Wednesday and is expected in Dutch Harbor tomorrow. Salvage experts have been wrestling with the Lone Star for the last 3 months, first trying to prevent fuel from leaking into the river and next turning to the recovery. The vessel continued inching its way into the mud of the Aygushik River until it was no longer visible, even at low tide. The Lone Star refused to budge during the first attempt to hoist it out in August, but an attempt on September 30th was successful. The vessel's owner's insurance company is expected to cover the costs for the 3.5 months of salvage and recovery, as well as make good with the Aygushik set net fishermen, whose season was lost after an oily sheen emanating from the Lone Star prompted Department of Fish and Game to close their fishery. Alaska's king crab fishing furlough is over. Most of the fleet received their quota permits from the National Marine Fisheries Service by the end of the day yesterday, Thursday. NIMF's employees had been furloughed during the government shutdown. Once they got back to work Thursday morning, spokesperson Julie Spiegel says NIMF's workers powered through.
We are up to date on all our crab permits. Thanks to the concentrated efforts of 6 members of our restricted access management staff.
A few crab boats are waiting for crew members to fly back up north after they got fed up with the delay and went home. But for the most part, the fleet is free to leave port and start fishing. Jake Jacobson runs the Intercooperative Exchange, a co-op of about 80 boats. He says he expects that fishermen will be able to catch enough crab in the next 3 weeks to meet the Japanese New Year's rush. Missing that deadline was a big concern. Now the only hurdle Jacobson expects is to face Mother Nature.
Well, ice is not an issue this time of year, but it wouldn't be king crab fishing without some weather.
Right now, the remnants of a powerful typhoon are sweeping through the Aleutians. A wind warning is in effect through Saturday. The king crab fishery is open until January 15th. This week, social service providers held a town hall meeting at Beans Cafe to discuss winter safety with Anchorage's homeless community. Keeping warm and safe outdoors is more important this winter than ever because the city's homeless shelter is going back to a rule that kicks people out if they're not making progress toward finding permanent housing. KSKA's Daisha Eaton has more.
Cyrus Farquhar is just the type of person that Brother Francis Shelter wants to see in permanent housing. But that's unlikely because, he says,
I'm one of those people that likes outside better.
But when it's too cold, Farquhar stays at the shelter. He's one of a couple of hundred chronically homeless people in Anchorage. The 30-day in, 30-day out rule forces residents who are not working with a caseworker to find housing or leave the shelter for 30 days before they come back in again. That could be a dangerous prospect when temperatures drop. Farquhar, who's been homeless for many years, says he worries that more people will die outside now that the rule is back in place.
If they keep on doing it, you're going to have more people frozen like they did 1 year, 7, 8, 9, 1 year. There's going to be more. And there's a lot of new people who is still new, doesn't know how to survive during winter.
Susan Bomolaski is the executive director of Catholic Social Services, which runs Brother Francis Shelter. She says the shelter started in 1983 as a response to several outdoor deaths. But she says going back to the 30-day in, 30-day out policy is necessary to motivate people who are using Brother Francis as a permanent residence instead of as an emergency shelter. The shelter started getting overcrowded and fights broke out, Bomolaski says, after the municipality raised the temperature at which shelters had to open their doors to 45 degrees. That was early 2012.
The unintended consequence is people were staying here when it hit 45, which was September, to when it went above 45, which was late May, and really staying here for those 9 months and not making positive steps. It also resulted in difficulties for our staff. Our numbers were very high. We were letting people in that had behavioral difficulties.
The result was an increase in calls to the Anchorage Police Department. Records show that there were more than 1,300 calls for service to APD from the shelter in 2012. In 2003, comparatively, there were just 35 calls. Most of the calls in 2012 were for disturbances, medical assistance, and drunk problems. Bomolaski says it's hard to turn people away, but she hopes a new 24-hour pickup service from the Anchorage Safety Center will help keep people from dying outside this winter. Mark Lessard with the Municipal Department of Health and Human Services, which runs the Anchorage Safety Center, says the center is getting two new vans.
We're going to be going to 5 8-hour shifts. The first shift will close the 6 a.m. to 2 p.m. gap in services that we currently have where there's no van running during that time. And the second van will go on top of the shifts that run from 2 p.m. to 6 a.m. in the morning to be able to respond to calls for assistance under Alaska Statute Title 47, which is, you know, someone that's incapacitated in a public place.
In September, the Anchorage Assembly approved just over $189,000 to fund the two additional vans. In June, the center began dispatching through the Anchorage Fire Department, which resulted in increased demand, says Lessard. They pick people up from Beans Cafe and Brother Francis Shelter several times a day, he says, and deliver them to the safety center where they can sober up. Farquhar says he's trying to get into the city's new 46-unit Housing First apartment complex for homeless alcoholics.
I'm trying to get in Carluck Manor. Just got to wait until there's an opening. A lady came down, we talked, and I filled out the paperwork. Most of my friends are up there. At least they're off the street.
But the program is full for now. So with winter on the way, Farquhar says he plans to bounce between his camp and Brother Francis Shelter. The Anchorage Police and Fire Departments do not keep track of outdoor deaths in Anchorage, nor does the Municipal Health Department or the Mayor's Office. Lessard says the Anchorage Safety Center hopes to begin running the new van shifts later this month. In Anchorage, I'm Daisha Eaton.
Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, a rosy outlook for Juneau's economy.
The private sector did a great job in jobs growth and has done so for three consecutive years.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by First National Bank Alaska, offering business solutions to help Alaska's dreams grow for 90 years. On the web at fnbalaska.com, an equal housing lender, member FDIC. And by the law firm of Landy Bennett Blumstein, a attorneys who know the people, businesses, tribes, and communities of Alaska. Landy Bennett Blumstein, online at lbblawyers.com.
Enroll Alaska has successfully signed up 7 people this week for health insurance on the state's new Affordable Care Act marketplace. But nearly 3 weeks into the launch of the marketplace, the company expected to have many more people enrolled. Tyann Bowling is COO of Enroll Alaska. She says despite a few successes, the marketplace is far from working perfectly.
I would say it's kind of 2 steps forward, 1 step back. Some things are functioning a little bit better, then there's glitches in other areas. It overall is very challenging. It's definitely not functioning at the level we need it to function.
Bowling says it takes up to 3 hours to successfully enroll as an individual in a health insurance plan, but patience doesn't always pay off.
You know, we're trying to enroll much more people than we've actually been able to enroll, but the problem is that sometimes it works and the majority of the time it doesn't.
Bowling says she's disappointed the marketplace is working so poorly, but confident it will eventually be running smoothly. Starting in November, Pan Air will start charging new baggage fees. For most of the year, the airline serves as the only commercial carrier between Anchorage and several rural hubs in southwest Alaska. The airline says the first bag will still be checked free, but the second bag will now cost $25. Bags 3 through 5 will cost $50 each to check, and the fees go up from there. Pan Air is also raising the ticket change and cancellation fee to $100. The changes go into effect for tickets purchased on or after October 30th. After a 4-year wait, the Department of Natural Resources will finally make a decision on applications having to do with the proposed Chewitna mine. As KDLL's Shaylin Cochran reports, a Superior Court decision handed down this week compels the department to make its decision within 30 days.
4 years is a long time to wait in line, an unreasonably long time. That was the decision of Superior Court Judge Mark Ridner in a suit against the DNR by the Chewitna Citizens Coalition. That group wants to stop a proposed strip mine planned by Delaware-based LLC Pacrim Coal. Ron Burnett is a spokesperson for the coalition.
I am feeling very good about the justice system right now because we've got a justice that has stepped forward and making the law that has been in place for a long time, and they're going to make the DNR abide by it.
The Chewitna folks submitted an application for an in-stream flow reservation. What that does is say essentially that this stream is reserved. In this case, the reservation is for salmon that swim up a couple creeks that the proposed coal mine will have to dig up to get to its load. The decision this week doesn't have anything to do directly with that proposal, but rather gives DNR 30 days to process the applications. Cook Inlet Keepers Bob Shavelson says the court's ruling could set a precedent.
This is a very important decision. The Alaska courts have never addressed the issue before, whether Alaskans have a right to keep water in streams for fish. And the court came out and said very definitively that the Parnell administration and the Alaska Department of Natural Resources were violating Alaskans' constitutional rights by precluding them from moving forward with keeping water in streams for wild salmon.
The mining project promises hundreds of jobs and hundreds of millions of dollars in investment for the area on the west side of Cook Inlet. All of that from an estimated 300 million tons of coal that lie directly underneath 11 miles of wild salmon streams. To dig those up, Pacrim needs a temporary water use permit, but if the reservation is granted, it might not matter. What the judge found in this case was that 4 years was an unreasonable amount of time for DNR to sit on Chewitna's application. Citing budget and personnel constraints, the department argued that it had a right to prioritize applications, but according to Judge Ridner's decision, that doesn't mean it can, quote, prioritize it into a black hole. Pacrim contends that it can rebuild the salmon streams once the mining is done, and to date, no one has been able to do that, but to Ron Barnett, it sounds like a pretty good business venture in and of itself.
One of the things that we told Pacrim when they said they could recreate this salmon stream when they get done is that we felt that they could make more money fixing streams because, you know, there's lots of places around the world that have been ruined and nobody can fix them. But if they know how to do that, they should go and do that.
He says he's not sure how things will play out after this step in the process, but that there's a lot at stake in the final decision.
You know, I'm 64 years old. I got grandkids and there's many generations behind me coming up through that should have the right to these salmon and clean water. This water at Lone Creek and Middle Creek is potable water. I mean, this water is so good that you can drink it. And that's what they'll be destroying along with fish.
DNR has until November 13th to make its decision about the coalition's IFR application. Reporting in Kenai, I'm Shaylin Cochran.
Employment is up, wages are up, and the private sector is growing. That's according to the Juneau Economic Development Council's latest Economic Indicators report, which paints a positive financial picture for the capital city and the rest of Southeast Alaska. KTOO's Casey Kelly reports.
JEDC's Ava Bornstein peppers her presentation with a series of pop quiz-style questions.
Mining jobs pay the highest average wages in Juneau. Which sector has the second highest average wages?
The answer is the federal government. Bornstein is the lead researcher on the Juneau and Southeast Alaska Economic Indicators Report, presented Thursday to the Juneau Chamber of Commerce. While the capital city's economy continues to be heavily dependent on government jobs, Bornstein says the private sector is slowly taking on a bigger role. Last year, employment in Juneau was up 1.5% from 2011, with a total of more than 18,000 jobs. That's despite local and federal government cuts and essentially flat state employment.
The private sector did a great job in jobs growth and has done so for three consecutive years. We've been on an upswing in 2012, 3% gain in jobs.
Mining topped the list for job growth in all sectors, adding 171 jobs last year. Overall, the retail, healthcare, and tourism sectors are the top three private employers in Juneau. Most areas of the economy saw wages grow in 2012, but once again, mining led the way.
6.6% increase in wages, average wages in the past year. Professional and business services were second, also above 6% in gains. Local government, state government were also above 5%.
The median household income in the capital city from 2009 to 2011 was more than $77,500. That's about $10,000 higher than the rest of the state and $26,000 higher than the median household income nationally. Bornstein says that helps make up for the cost of living in Juneau, which is 30% higher than the national average.
The highest costs are in our housing, our utilities, and our health care.
Juneau's population hit another all-time high last year, growing by more than 400 people to 32,832. JEDC Executive Director Brian Holz called the economic trends in the last year very, very positive.
Employment is up in our region. All wages are up. Our private sector is growing faster than our public sector, which in general is positive for our community. The population is an all-time high, both in Juneau and in the region. And generally, our industries are stable.
The Chamber of Commerce crowd largely agreed with Holst. Marianne Ray owns Pearson's Pond,
a luxury boutique hotel in the Mendenhall Valley.
She says business is back to where it was before bottoming out during the recession, and she only expects it to get better.
This year, we had the best July we've had since I purchased the inn. So, and people are starting to spend more on excursions. So I think the tourism industry is a trailing indicator of what's going on. So if we see things have gotten better this year overall, I think we'll see tourism certainly improve next year as well.
The Economic Indicators Report is JEDC's major annual publication. The entire report, as well as past year's economic indicators, can be found at www.jedc.org. In Juneau, I'm Casey Kelly.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by ERA. For more than 40 years, ERA Alaska's planes have carried the stories of Alaska. ERA Alaska, bringing Alaskans together. More at flyera.com. The Kinnickarm Bridge and Toll Authority is developing the Kinnickarm Crossing to further develop the transportation system between Anchorage and the Mat-Su Borough. The bridge could create construction jobs, provide access to land for commercial, industrial, and residential development, and shorten the route to Alaska's interior and North Slope. There's more information on the Kinnickarm Bridge at kinnickarmbridge.com. This message sponsored by the Kinnick Arm Bridge and Toll Authority.
Ketchikan,
Kotzebue,
Dillingham,
Sitka,
Chugiak,
Fairbanks,
Fort Yukon,
Wrangell,
Barrow,
Unalaska, Dutch Harbor,
Alaknarechamut.
This is AK on Alaska News Nightly. I'm Dave Benninger. This week on AK, spearfishing. For 1 month each fall, interior residents wade into the crystal clear waters of the Chattanooga River to catch whitefish. They spawn in the fall, unlike other fish in Alaska. The state limits both the number of permits and the harvest, and as KUAC's Emily Schwing found out, this isn't your typical fishery. Instead of rods and reels or nets, fishermen use spears.
Whitefish are one of Alaska's most common species.
Oh, there's one right in front of me. Come on, Emily Schwing, get this one. Oh, I missed him.
I'm getting a lesson in spearfishing, and so far, things aren't going so well. Lifelong Fairbanks and Corey Carrilla gives me some pointers.
You're going to want to hold your spear under the water, okay? And you want to move as slowly as you can towards them, and then give it a little pop, okay. Just like that.
We stand waist-deep in the Chattanooga River holding 8-foot-long spears. Carrilla has been catching whitefish this way all his life.
I've had a lot of good times here. A lot of good times on this river.
He remembers when people would line their boats up along the riverbank to pull whitefish from the crystal clear waters. Area management biologist Audra Brazzi says in the 1980s, the fishery was huge.
It was unrestricted. They could just get as many fish as they wanted. And then a cap was put on it, a 15 fish per day limit. People were still harvesting. I mean, thousands and thousands of whitefish were pulling out. I wasn't here at the time, but I understand people would take bushel baskets full of them.
But overfishing led to a population decline, and the fishery closed in 1992. It reopened in 2007, and now it's much more restricted, with a limited number of permits and a limited harvest. On top of that, Brazzi says whitefish are hard to catch.
If you try to catch a whitefish on hook and line, it's difficult. So doing a spear fishery is about the only way to get them if you want to harvest whitefish to eat. Another interesting thing about these whitefish is they're really old.
They can live up to 15 years, and unlike other species, they spawn again and again every fall, but only at night. The darkness mixed with the brisk autumn temperatures may deter some fishermen, but not Corey Carrilla. His tried and true methods solve both problems.
Ooh, fogged it up.
He lights a Coleman lantern. It sits inside a wooden box that's open in the front. The whole thing hangs from my neck. As we wade waist deep into the cold river, the lanterns hiss. Wearing this contraption comes with a warning from Carrilla and his best friend, Dave Ensley.
You got to remember, do not get water on that glass. It can explode.
Okay,
because it's so hot. Yeah. Be careful.
You get excited and you want to lunge four-way forward and you'll dip the lantern in the water, leaning forward trying to get that fish.
Don't do that.
The yellow light from the flame will help us see the fish. We can't use LED headlamps because that white light doesn't shine through the water the same way. But there's still one other challenge.
You got to train your eyes to look at them.
Oh, you sure do. Here's one.
You get him?
Yep. There he is.
There he is.
Carrilla has years of experience, so the water doesn't throw his depth perception off like mine. But finally.
Right there, on your
right.
Yes, I got him!
Good job! Okay, pick him up. Sweet.
Nice.
Okay.
We pluck the silvery fish from my spear and drop it in a burlap bag that hangs from my shoulder. After nearly 2 hours, we're cold enough to call it a night. Carrilla says there's only one more thing I need to know.
We make rookies take a bite out of the first fish they catch.
Lucky for me, my one fish floated out of my burlap bag somewhere along the river. For AK, I'm Emily Schwing.
Now it's time for 300 Villages. This week we're headed to Nunwalik, a small Russian Orthodox community across Kachemak Bay from Homer. On maps, it's often called English Bay.
My name is Nancy Yetton. I am the IGAP assistant for the Nunwalik IRA Council. Life in Nunwalik is very family-oriented. One of my cousins Robert Kravaznikov said, we're all like a chain link, and if one link is missing, it really disrupts what is going on in the community. If you need help, whether it's through food, emotional support, community members rally together to help you out to get through whatever it is you're dealing with in your life. Well, many of us depend on fish, seals, feline, berries, vegetation coming from the ocean, from the land. It's just, flowers even. It's just right here in front of us, anytime we want it. Oh, it's a million-dollar view. It is totally priceless, totally priceless. There is no other place in the whole wide world would I want to live. It is an amazing, it's open. Right across from us, we have, Mount Redoubt, Mount Augustine, Mount St. Eliamna here. It's just beautiful. And we live on the foothill of Mount St. John. So we're very fortunate. We're just very blessed with what we've been given. This community is so rich. Rich of people, rich of resources, rich of culture. It's a beautiful little community.
Nancy Yetton works for the Nunwalloc IRA Council. 300 Villages is AK's attempt to put every community in Alaska on the radio. Thanks for listening to AK This Week. We had help from Emily Schwing, Annie Feit, and Dave Waldron. Tune in next week for more unique stories from around the state. I'm Dave Bendinger.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at alaskapublic.org. You can also follow us on Twitter at APRN. We had reports tonight from Dan Bross in Fairbanks, Dave Benninger in Dillingham, Lauren Rosenthal in Unalaska, Shaylin Cochran in Soldotna, Daisha Eaton in Anchorage, and Casey Kelly in Juneau. Our editor and producer is Annie Feit. Our audio engineer is Dave Waldron. Josh Edge is our web producer. And I'm Lori Townsend. Have a great weekend.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by
BP, supporting public broadcasting in Alaska.
The Historic Anchorage Hotel, a mix of historical architecture and modern technology, offers banquet facilities with catering and bartenders. A boutique hotel in the heart of downtown. HistoricAnchorageHotel.com. And by Bradley Reed & Associates, Alaska's full-service ad agency, branding Alaska's largest corporations and supporting nonprofits. Bradley Reed, helping Alaska communicate for 45 years. Many Alaskans are choosing to make energy efficiency improvements around their homes. Investing in efficient light bulbs or a programmable thermostat could save hundreds annually. For more tips on how to save money and energy, visit akenergyefficiency.org. This message sponsored by the Alaska Energy Authority.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.